The next kina that we're going to be reading is the kina on the Shoah, Hazocher Mezkirav. If anybody needs a copy of it, the copy's on the Bima. I first want to begin by once again thanking Shlomo Weiss for all his hard work in putting the program together. May we be zocher not to have to put this program together next year. May he be zocher to put together a much more festive and simchadik program next year in Yerushalayim. I've been struggling this year much more than years past to piece together my thoughts regarding this kina and regarding the Shoah in general. I've been speaking about it the last couple of years, and it's very personal to me. And as Tzvi mentioned earlier, and I think Rav Alperin also mentioned last night, that when you see an image, Tzvi mentioned the image of the burnt house that he passed through a few days after the tragedy that happened in New York a few years ago. And Rav Alperin mentioned last night the Takana of Rabbi Yishuv ben Gamla, who was misaking that the children should learn Yerushalayim so that they could see the Kohanim in his rizos, and they could see the beauty, the teferis, and the pe'er of the Kohen Gadol. When you see something, you live something personally, that makes a roshim that's indelible, that doesn't escape. When you don't see that, you don't live with that, and it's not part of your life, it becomes very hard to relate, which is obviously the reason that we have such trouble relating to the Churban HaBayis now. In this past year, my last physical image, my last link, returned to Neshama, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I no longer have that link. And my children, who Baruch Hashem were able to know her well, and know three of their grandparents very well, who are all survivors, they have images in their heads, but they don't, it's no longer there. The matriarchs and the patriarchs that we had, that we grew up with, are no longer there. And there was, every year on Tisha B'Av in the afternoon, my grandparents both were, my mother had them both interviewed a number of years ago when Schindler's List came out and the Spielberg Institute arose, and he had people interview all as many survivors as possible, and they both made, they were both interviewed on tapes. We watched those every year in the afternoon, and some of my thoughts are based on some of the stories that my grandmother said in that interview, as well as an article that was written in this past year about her in the local Denver Jewish newspaper. It was almost 80 years ago, within a few weeks, on September 1st, of 1939. It was a few days before Yontif was coming. Bobby lived in the shtetl of, shtetl was a town, was a suburb of Krakow called Sosnovich. And life there was as life is, for all of us. Obviously, they probably weren't as wealthy as we were, but they lived a very full, fulfilling life. They had parnasa. She talks about how her mother used to bake extra goods for Shabbos to give to other people. They were very well respected members of the community. She recalls the smell of chalent wafting through the airs when you walk through the neighborhood on Erev Shabbos, on every Erev Shabbos. I used to ask her at different times during the year about different things that she used to remember from growing up. She would never speak about the war itself, but she would speak about growing up, the few brief years. She was 12 or 13 when in 1939. And I remember clearly her asking, one year in Lag BaOmer, I asked her what they used to do in Sosnovich and Lag BaOmer. And for those of us who remember Lag BaOmer in the States, at least the way it was 20, 30, 40 years ago, Lag BaOmer was a day that maybe, I don't know, we went to the park to play baseball. There wasn't really much else going on in Lag BaOmer in America. It was just a day to maybe take a couple hours off, but I don't recall anything specifically. There was no Medura, there was no, none of the celebrations we have now. And she recalled that It was a day they played special games, and they were in the Durot. They were going at night, and the boys played special games. She described a special ball they used to use, and it was a very, very festive day. And that, you know, they lived life to its fullest. And one day, on September 1st, their lives came crashing down. Everything they knew changed. They went from having food and having wealth and having a home to waiting on bread lines at night. And my great-grandmother was snatched away in the middle of the night one night from her family and never to be seen again. This went on for 6-7 months until the town was basically liquidated and sent off to various camps, specifically, mostly to Auschwitz. And for the next 6 years, she literally ran for her life at every point. There are stories we know about the cattle cars. You know, we see images of cattle cars and what that means, that Jews were taken to the camps and literally, you know, couldn't move. They were so stuffed. But there were other cattle cars towards the end of the war that the Jews were also transported. They were transported before their final death march. And after living for 6 years in this Gehenna, where they literally lived off of crusts of bread, and if you got a potato, you were lucky. The soup they gave was not soup, it was a little bit of broth. They were emaciated, they had nothing left. There was death all around them. The smell, the life, everything was death. And this is 6 years. This wasn't, you know, a couple of weeks. We go through the 9 days, and everyone's figuring out where they're going to make the next siyum because we can't have fleishiks for 9 whole days. Rachmana litzlan. For 6 years, they lived off of crusts of bread and a potato, maybe, if they're lucky. The cattle cars that transported them at the end were not filled, it was not like Lahavdil, like the Mikdash was, where you couldn't fill the floor because there were so many people. There were fewer people. And when you walked from cattle car, you couldn't touch the floor either. You couldn't touch the floor because you were walking on other dead bodies. People dropped left and right. People on the death march, which my grandmother describes, walking for days and a week, over a week, in the cold, in the bitter cold, with not really any shoes. And if you stop for a second, you're gone. You're finished. Every aspect of the tochacha that's described in Bechukosai and in Kisavo, they lived for 6 years. Erev mitein boker, boker mitein erev. You didn't know the next morning. Rosh Weiss on his sefer on Emunah B'Tochen he just put out had a couple of shuvos on the Holocaust and on some of the things we should remember. You didn't know if you're going to wake up in the morning. You said Mo Da'ani in the morning. You really actually meant it because you had no idea if you're going to wake up. And the person beside you didn't necessarily wake up. 6 years. 6 years of Gehenna. We can't fathom it. We can't begin to understand. And it doesn't even last for 6 years only, because afterwards, these people were, you know, some people were completely destroyed spiritually, and it's far be it from us to judge them. And even those who weren't, they're traumatized. You know, we talk about PTSD. They were traumatized the rest of their lives. In this article that's written, it was written, my grandmother describes, and I never knew this, of course, but she describes going through the Seder every year in her beautiful small home with, the best china that she had, the finest china put out for a Pesach Seder on every year. And she used to go through the Seder, and I just remember her with a smile on her face because she was watching her children and grandchildren. But she describes how behind the veil, behind the mask, as she's talking about going me'avdus l'cheirus, she's not viewing Paro, she's not viewing the tyranny of Paro and the horrors of Mitzrayim. She's viewing in her life, in her mind's eye, every single year, the Gehenna she lived through in Poland, in Germany. She's not thinking of Paro, she's thinking about Hitler Yimach Shemo. She's thinking about Mengele Yimach Shemo, who did terrible atrocities to her sister. She's thinking about all those years that never ever escape. And all those survivors, every single survivor, the ones you still meet, I can promise you, there's a smile, and there's a sweet smile, and they're so happy to see Yidden. They're so happy to see that we've continued. But behind that mask is pain, pain that we can never, ever, ever imagine and that will never, ever go away. Waking up in the middle of the night screaming, chills, fear of what's going to happen, fear if you send your children to Eretz Yisrael, that they may not come back because there's wars in Eretz Yisrael, because we see all what's going on in the media in America. That fear never ever stopped, and it moved on to the next generation. They've done studies to know that even second generation survivors, even third generation survivors, you know, there's still some level of trauma. There's a heavy level of trauma within them. It was forced into their DNA. It never ever stopped. So we're getting towards or past Chatzos, and we're going to get up soon from the floor. And Tisha B'Av, as we've mentioned, has an aspect, obviously the Avelos and remembering, and all these things are important. But it has the aspect of Nechama to it. As Eliyahu mentioned, we say, Amalka Minachem Eschem, B'Sof Shar Avel Yisroel B'Yerushalayim. You don't describe HaKadosh Baruch as Amalka in too many places. Because HaKadosh Baruch is with us at all times. And we need to feel that especially when we're in a moment of Tsar. And in this article, at the end of the article, the author asked my grandmother, the interviewer asked my grandmother, you know, how did you keep on going? How did you keep your emunah? And she broke into a song. It was an old Yiddish song that she sings, and she describes how it basically means that there's never a last road, there's never an end. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always with us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us every step of the way. And if you think about the miracles that have happened, and the how we've survived and how we've grown in the 75 to 80 years since the Shoah has passed, the obvious manifestation is Eretz Yisrael. But if you think for a second, I was thinking last night, we were growing up, and probably still now, you thought about there's certain images in America of homeless people. And there's cards in front of those homeless people, and they almost always used to say that they're a Vietnam vet. The Vietnam War happened in the 60s and 70s, early 70s, and it seems that most of the soldiers who came and survived it didn't really survive. They were broken, they came back to nothing. You don't read about too many successful Vietnam, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't remember reading about too many successful Vietnam vets. You received plenty of homeless Vietnam vets, and they were destroyed people. And if you think about how many survivors physically flourished after the Shoah, how many of them, there's no stories of homeless, I mean, I'm sure there are, but you didn't hear about stories, but you hear about stories about survivors, but Baruch Hashem, they've been able to grow families and through crazy amounts of challenges, overcoming them and coming from absolutely nothing, zero, not a penny to their name, coming to Eretz Yisrael, coming to America. Again, I'm not talking about spiritually some survived, some didn't, but they came and they were able to flourish. And if that's not a if that's not a sign of HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving us the koach to continue, to always continue, and to give us nechama that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always with us, I don't know what is. Netzach Yisrael lo yishaker. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always is with us. And there's a video that went around last week about a survivor who's recently reached her 104th birthday. I think she was from a Vishenser family in Haifa. And she had one dream. She had one request for her birthday. It was for all of her descendants, all her tzatzaeha, to be able to come to the Kotel in Davin and be together at the Kotel. And there's imagery and there's pictures that went around last week of this event that happened, of hundreds and hundreds of people there, all celebrating one survivor's glory. And there's two things to be thought about that. One is, if you think about 6 million Yidden and how many, 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 many descendants they would have had and how much we lost, it's an unfathomable number. It's you can't even think about it. But if you think about the growth that's happened, the growth in Yiddishkeit, the growth in ourselves, coming back to Eretz Yisrael, living in Eretz Yisrael, flourishing in Eretz Yisrael, being able to do everything that those people who lived in Gehenna for 6 years could never ever dream of. They couldn't dream of waking up in the morning, let alone having children who are from, let alone having grandchildren, great-grandchildren who are Marbitzei Torah and who are leaders of communities. That is the ultimate nechama. And that's the nechama that we take to us. So we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the end of Eicha, we ask, you know, why did Hashem forsake us? Lama l'ensach tishkachenu ta'azvenu li'arach yamin. As we end, and we're going to get up in a few minutes, we're going to sing Alei Tzion and then get up. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to finally, Hashivenu Hashem Eilach of Neshuva, Chadesh Yomeinu Kikadem.
Zofim Askira, Dor, 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 D